Hello, everybody. Okay, we're going to deal today with a certain aspect of Shalom Bayit. This is hopefully going to be relevant for people who are married, but also people who are contemplating marriage and would like to think more about how the relationship between the man and the woman takes place. So I have to tell you a little bit of history with what I'm about to say today. I'm about to quote to you from a Medrash from Tanna Dabei Eliyahu, and the Medrash has it's kind of like peeling an onion. You get to deeper and deeper layers of what this concept is. The very first interpretation of it is going to be the basic way it's perceived, but as this Medrash has been sitting with me and I'm kind of discovering and thinking about different levels, we're going to talk about three levels of understanding this concept, each one deeper than the one before it. Okay, so let's get to it. In the Shulchan Aruch, and even Ezer, on the end of Siman Samach Tev, if anybody's interested in looking it up, Chazal say, "Ein lecha kshira b'nashim, ela she'osa ratzon ba'ala." That an isha kshira, like a really good lady, a kosher lady, if you want to call it, is somebody who does the ratzon of her husband. Where is this coming from? It's coming, the makor for this is in Tanna Dabei Eliyahu, Perek Tes, where the Medrash asks, why was Ya'el, for anybody who knows the story of Ya'el in the Navi, who kills Sisera, and because of her, the Jewish people win the war. And the Medrash asks, Manushtanet Ya'el eshet chaver hakeni mikol anashim kulam shebaata tshu'a gdola l'Yisrael al yada. What was different about her? Why was she zoche that all Klal Yisrael won the war because of her? And the Medrash goes on and says, "Kach amru chachamim, Ya'el isha kshira hita, v'osa ratzon ba'ala hita. V'kan amru chachamim, ein lecha isha kshira b'nashim, ela she'osa ratzon ba'ala." And from here, we're saying that the answer is that she was mekayim this concept. She was osa ratzon ba'ala, and therefore she was zoche that the Jewish people won the war through her. What I'd like to do today is focus specifically on these three words, osa ratzon ba'ala, doing the ratzon of her husband. What does this mean? And we're going to see there are three dimensions to understanding this. The first dimension is the one that is the most basic, and I'm going to honestly say that for some women this is very difficult to think about. That's why I hold on, and we're going to get deeper. And the second two levels might be easier for you to understand and resonate with you. But the most basic level, osa ratzon ba'ala, she wants to do his ratzon. And of course, the implication here being that, you know, when his ratzon and her ratzon are the same, then it's not even so clear that she's doing his ratzon. But maybe there's sometimes a conflict of interest, a different way of doing things, a specific request or something that's important to him that's not so easy for her, and that the ishak shira osa ratzon ba'ala, she puts effort into trying to do things her husband's way, into being mekayim, into doing his will. I think that here we get to a lot of confusion, and frankly, this is a topic of its own, which I'm not going to go into very deeply, but how we understand giving, how we understand doing somebody else's will, even when it's difficult for me, and what kind of feelings that conjures up for me when I have a certain thing, a certain way I'd like to do things, and somebody else wants something else, and I do their ratzon. It's confusing for us because on one level we live with the Jewish concepts of giving and mesirut nefesh and that marriage is about building, and yet we also have a normal level of concern with our own wills and our own ratzon, and then you have society telling you, don't let anybody tell you what to do, don't let anybody take advantage of you, why should you do it their way, don't be a pushover. And I think that for many of us, doing the will of our husbands could be like a cocktail of some of us thinking, well, this is a good thing, and that vitor and giving to each other is like the glue in a relationship, and it's important. And yet then I have this voice that says, well, what about me? And it's very, very confusing sometimes. So on this most basic level of understanding the concept of osa ratzon ba'ala, I would like to quote to you from a very interesting study that John Gottman did, and I Dafka like to quote from non-Jewish studies because I think that sometimes when we have Jewish concepts in our mind, but we also have the secular world telling us, you know, well, you know, you should do it your way and don't give it to anybody else. We need to be able to also understand that even on a completely not Jewish perspective, there is a concept of Otzer Ratzon Bala being positive. Now, we don't need the secular perspective. We have, I could give you a million makos from Torah for why it's good to be a giver and how giving builds us, and maybe we'll get into that a little bit. But I just, if for argument's sake, I wanted to even go back to the side of me that wonders about what giving is, you know, and what the world says about giving. Let's understand this in a deeper way, so that we could answer that voice of ourselves if we need to. Okay, so John Gottman, in his study on marriages, asked thousands of couples, not Jewish couples, even though he is Jewish, to evaluate certain dimensions of their marriage, to answer questions about their relationship. And then he asked them to rate their level of marital satisfaction. Do they consider themselves happily married? So one of his questions was, he asked the question as follows: do you feel that you are sacrificing for your spouse? And I don't know what he expected to find. Maybe he expected to find a negative correlation, that people who were sacrificing too much in their relationships were not happy. And yet he found a positive correlation. There was a very high correlation between people who said that they were sacrificing for their spouses, who also felt that they were in a very happy marriage. So I once heard like an analysis of his study being done, and it was very interesting. We're trying to understand, why is it that if a person feels that they're sacrificing, would they then say that they're in a happy marriage? Maybe they're being taken advantage of, maybe. So what we're trying to understand on a deeper level is that really, and this is a very important principle, and again, the Torah is all about this principle, but even the secular research agrees that giving is supposed to make me feel good. Giving is good. And therefore, when a person feels that they are sacrificing, it means that they're stretching in a relationship, that they sometimes have to do things that are not easy for them, for the good of the other person, because they love the other person. This is supposed to be make a person feel good. And you know, all the scientific studies say that giving reduces induces positive hormones, endorphins, the good feeling hormones. And I think we all know that very often if somebody, unrelated, out of the context of marriage, if somebody's going through a hard time or is feeling a little bit low, one of the first pieces of advice that we might give them is, you know, go to a hospital and volunteer, do something for somebody else. It raises the spirit. It gives a person a feeling of more, of more happiness. And therefore, giving is really something which makes a person feel good, good about his relationships, good about his life. There's a much, much, much deeper level and a dimension to understanding why giving is good for me. I'm not sure we're going to get to it today. Maybe we'll address it in the future if we have further shiurim on this topic. But for now, I'll explain just on the more basic level that if the basic axiom is that giving is good and giving makes a person feel good, then when a person is giving and is not feeling good, they have to ask themselves what is happening. And Rabbi Gatcha Twersky talks about this. He talks about giving coming from a healthy place and coming from healthy self-esteem. People who give and are coming from a good, healthy place should be feeling good about their giving. Sometimes you have a giver who is fueled by low self-esteem, and the purpose of their giving is just to prove their worthiness to the other person. They don't feel that they're good if they're not giving. And these are people who give and give and give, but they are often resentful of their giving. And there's also other issues which would cause a person to not feel good about his giving. And basically one of those things is going to be the concept of self-deprivation. In other words, a person who is a healthy giver can give to themselves and give to another person happily. Meaning, I want to nurture myself. I want to be a happy person, and my purpose, I'm taking care of myself so that I could be a happy, balanced person, and I will be able to also be a bigger giver in life. Sometimes people who are givers have a certain concept of self-deprivation, meaning they only feel worthy when they're giving, and therefore they don't allow the other person to ever bring them a bowl of soup. Or maybe they have a martyr-like syndrome where they give in a way that they could be able to say at the end, oh, I'm such a schmata, all I did all day was give to other people. And they're fueled by something a little bit unhealthy. You can have two people who are going through the day doing a tremendous amount of giving and sacrifice for somebody else. One of them comes out feeling like a princess and feeling like they're in a very beautiful relationship and they're giving to the world. The other one feels taken advantage of, resentful, schmata-like. And we have to realize that if the premise, I'll be Torah and I'll be secular research, is that giving is supposed to be good, a person who is doing the ratzon of her husband and is not feeling good has to ask herself, am I coming, can I do something to make myself be a healthier giver? And maybe it might be a little bit more taking care of myself. Maybe it might be that there's something very selfish about my attitude and I really just want for myself. I'm coming from a more narcissistic place, and therefore anytime I have to part with anything of mine, my time, my energy is difficult for me. It requires a further evaluation. But what the Medrash is trying to tell you is an Isha Shera Osa Rotzon Bala, that a beautiful marriage is based on giving, it's based on sacrificing for each other. One further point that I'm going to make is that John Gottman does talk about equality in the relationship, but he talks about it also in a very Jewish sense. Equality in a relationship doesn't mean always I do the dishes Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, so you do it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It means that overall in the relationship there's a sense that we're both contributing, our opinions are important, you care about what I have to say. And he says people who have a certain kind of feeling that they are important in the relationship can give sometimes proportionally more than their spouse, meaning it doesn't have to be divided equally because there's a certain equality in the fact that we both respect each other and care about each other's opinion. And therefore, on the technical range, think about it. You know, if you're married to a big time chacham, you're probably giving a lot on a technical level in the house to keep the house going. If you're married to a big lawyer who has big hours, if you're married to a chinuch person, if you're anybody whose husband is doing a lot out of the house for different reasons, different contexts, is going to possibly be giving more. But the healthy giving allows me to be in that position and continue to still nurture myself, come from a healthy place, and get enjoyment and satisfaction from giving to the other person. So the Isha Kshera Osa Ratzon Bala is the feeling, the picture I have in my mind is somebody who does sacrifice sometimes, but who generally, in a bigger level, feels happy with their life. And people who feel that their giving is not making them happy should try to get into a deeper place of where their lack of happiness is coming from. And how could I be a healthier giver and a better giver who doesn't have resentment? Okay, like I said, there's a much deeper spiritual dimension to being flexible in the relationship. We'll see if I have time to deal with that today. But now I'd like to go on to the second level. So we basically said the first level of Osa Ratzon Bala is a very basic level of, you know, he would like, you know, the salad cut in a certain way, or he would like, you know, us to do something, or the family to have a certain project, and I say, okay, great, let's do it that way, let's go with it, you know, and that's the Osa Ratzon Bala that the Medrash is saying, that an Ishuk Shera is happy to be able to do his will, and she isn't resentful. Not to say that it isn't sometimes hard, but that in the overall picture there's a sense of satisfaction from this. Okay, that's the most basic level. And if this level is hard for you, then hold on as we go to a deeper level and try to understand the deeper levels of Osa Ratzon Bala. Level number two, we're going to focus on the words Osa Ratzon Bala. I'm going to define this differently. If in the first category it was doing his will, the second category is going to be creating his will. Osa Ratzon Ba'ala. She's creating his will, but let's make it even deeper. She's creating his aspiration, Ratzon, a she'ifa, something that he wants. And this is a deeper level. Creating his aspiration, Osa Ratzon Ba'ala. And here we have the concept of the bina yeter that women have, and how we go about helping create a will that we would like our husband to have that he might not even have yet. And let me demonstrate. Sometimes as a woman, we, especially since our voice is important in the home, there is something that we would like our husband to care about or to put focus on, but he is not so motivated in that area. It could be anything from wanting him to spend more time learning Torah, to wanting him to spend more time giving me attention, to wanting him to have a better relationship with my mother, to anything. There's something that I really would like that I think is important for the home, important for him, important for the ruchnias of the home, important for the harmony of the home, and yet he doesn't seem to be so motivated in that area. So there's many different levels of how we deal with these things, often many of them not so successful. The less thought out way is saying, you know, I really think you should be doing this and this and this and this, to which very often the male ego will fight back, maybe even not verbally, but thinking, nobody tells me what to do. That itself is a whole deeper topic of understanding that there's a very deep place in a person that doesn't want to be told what to do. This is true about men and women as well, women as well, but it might be a stronger male characteristic of not being told what to do. And therefore, she wants to be smart about it because she would like to develop his motivation in order to increase a certain behavior or a certain thing in the home. But she knows that when she directly commands that he does it, it's very often, she might win the battle and get him to do it this one time or whatever it is, but on a deeper level, he doesn't necessarily want to be pushed around. I would like to say, and this is also a deeper topic, but she might win the battle in the sense that he might do what she needs him to do always. But if he feels that it's because he has a wife who's standing over him with a stopwatch and a stick, she might get the results she wants, but in a certain level, she's also devaluing him and deflating him because he feels like he's a little boy being pushed around, told what to do. So she can win the battle in the sense, even in the bigger sense, that he will do constantly what she wants. But on a level of his self-esteem growing and his motivation to develop himself and to believe in himself, she actually is losing because she's taking some of the fuel out of his motivation for other things because he feels he's being pushed around by a dominating wife. So even us women who are strong and powerful and leaders, we have to figure out how to do this osat ratzon ba'ala, meaning the deeper level of what I want to do is I want to create the ratzon for him. I want him to have the ratzon. I want him to be able to say later, oh, this is what I wanted and I went after it. And that's the bina yisera, that's the chachmat nashim, banta beta. It's like, it's so easy to just say to him, this is what I want you to do, go do it, you know. It's another thing to think, how am I going to get to a place where he wants it and he believes that he's perpetuating his own ratzon? And that's like kind of the more tricky, subtle thing, which especially if you're a very direct communicator or if you're very powerful, it's going to be harder to get to a certain goal in a more subtle way. Here we also say that because the woman was created from the internal organ of man, she's often going to use more subtlety, more hidden ways of going about doing about increasing his ratzon. Now, you might think that this sounds manipulative, meaning, why can't I just say to him, I want you to do this? Because this is not about being manipulative. This is about the fact that a man, on a deep level, al pi Torah hashkafa, needs to be a mashpia. He needs to feel that he's influencing. And when he feels that he is the one who is being influenced in a direct way, it doesn't allow him to thrive as much. So we're not being manipulative as much as we are understanding that it's important for him to have this as his value and not to do it because it's my wife's value and she's making me do it. How do we go about doing this? So let me give you an example. Let's say you have a woman whose husband is a professional. He works very, very, very hard. And, you know, when they were dating, they spoke a lot about how Torah is always going to be a main focus in the home. But she finds that as, you know, life goes on, Torah is becoming less and less a focus in the home. And she really would like him to learn more. And he's just not motivated right now. He had those years when he was learning in yeshiva, and he loved the learning. But now life has changed, and he's not as connected. Now, the most probably not successful way to go about it would be for her to say, look, I married you, I expect you to learn, you better put in your hours, clock in, tell me that you've learned X amount of time a day because that's what I'm demanding. At best, she'll get some results in the practical world, but like as we said before, she's standing there with her stopwatch and her stick, and she's not exactly motivating him on a deep level to want to do it, and she's definitely not building up his self-esteem by doing it that way. Then you have the way that people sometimes say, okay, so I'll be a little bit more subtle. Sweetheart, you know, I heard there's a great cheer. You know what? I'll watch the kids and you go learn. You know, it'll be great and I'd be so happy for you to go. To which maybe he'll respond. Or he might very sweetly say back, oh, thank you so much, sweetie. No, I really want to help you wash the dishes and I want to help you with the kids. And she's saying, No, don't go, don't worry, it's fine. And he's saying back, No, I want to help you with the kids. So really it's all very, very sweet and nice and not domineering, but they're basically in a sweet power struggle. She's sweetly telling him what she wanted to do, and he's sweetly saying back that this is not what he wants to do. So even those kind of motivations often don't work. Sometimes they do, but often they don't. So what does Osa Ratzon Bala mean on this level of creating his motivation? And here it's going to be very subtle. So the subtlety is that she has to see him as being a provider of that thing that she wants. Now, this is tricky because he's not yet providing it. But any time she sees even a glimpse of him providing in that way, she is responding by being very, very happy, in a very good mood about the thing that he's providing. Meaning there's no direct demand here, because a direct demand means that it's her ratzon and she's putting it on him. She's trying to create a motivation. She's trying to sprout motivation in him. If we go back to the fact that we say that a man wants to be a mashpia, he needs to influence, he needs to feel that he's influencing, and anything that a man is mashpia and is being accepted well, it creates a positive pleasure cycle where he wants to provide more. So if a man brings home a nice big paycheck and the wife is thrilled that she can go buy the fur coat she wants and the this she wants, he feels, wow, I'm providing, and it motivates him to want to bring back another paycheck. When a man is providing in roughness and feels that his wife is appreciating it and that she's growing from it, it creates that same positive cycle of wanting to provide more. Anything that I'm providing that is being appreciated creates the cycle of wanting to provide more. And here our problem is that we want to start off a positive pleasure cycle of the providing. In order to do that, it has to somehow go down in his psyche that she is appreciating that he's providing something, and that, wow, when I provide this, this is really being received well. And that could be anything from giving attention to spending time with the children to spending more time learning to providing ruchnius. When she catches him doing a little bit of it, she is so happy and appreciative that it goes down in his mind, wow, I'm really providing here, and this feels great to be a provider. I'd like to provide more. Now, again, depending on the subtlety of the relationship and the person, we have to be subtle with the way we're appreciating also. Because when you say it out there, some people can say it out straight, wow, that was so amazing that you gave that to our Torah, and I really appreciated it, and that was great. For some people, that's going to be a good thing because, you know, it's out there that she appreciates. For some people, for some couples, that's not going to be subtle enough, because he's going to understand that she's a little bit overrating his Dvar Torah in order to get a cycle going. She might have to be more subtle than that. And it might have to be more like the fact that she just has a big smile on her face, or that she's really focusing when he's talking and she's really looking and she's not involved in a million different things. Or that she might come back 3 or 4 days later and say to him, you know, I was thinking about that medrash that you were quoting and I was applying it in this and this way. Or she might ask him a question on something that he said, meaning it's a little counterintuitive, because here we are wanting somebody to provide something with that we feel that they're not providing enough, and yet we have to catch them providing it even in tiny increments and start off the pleasure cycle of, wow, you know, he has to think, when I provide, she's happy. For women who feel that their husband is not providing enough ruchnius, the counterintuitive way to create his ratzon would be to make him the rav of the house. Ask your shilas to him. Ask your opinion, as his opinion. Ask him if this thing is lashon hara. Ask him how he would handle the situation. Meaning, find him, catch him, or allow him a little bit to provide, so that you can show that this is something that I'm enjoying, and hopefully to start off the cycle. For the woman who wants more attention in a certain way, when he does provide even little bits of that attention, she seems so happy and fulfilled that it goes down, wow, this is great. This is what we call Osa Ratzon Bala, because after a while, even subconsciously, he starts connecting. When I do this thing, whatever that thing is that she needs or she wants, she seems so happy. And then he has his own rutzone to provide that because he wants to be a provider. And she managed through her positive feedback, her subtle positive feedback, she managed to create a cycle where he became the one who wanted to learn more, give more attention, spend more time with the kids, work more in halacha, know more halacha, whatever it is that she needed him to do. She was osa rutzon bala. She created a rutzon for him. And he walks away thinking that it's his rutzon. And therefore, it's also going to stick with him more. It's going to be good for his self-esteem. He's not going to feel that his wife was controlling him. But rather, through a subtle, subtle process, she started off a cycle of him wanting to provide something. And she was osa rutzon bala. She created his rutzon. I once was walking in a community where I lived, and I saw my friend in her garden with her toddler, and he was on a little Tykes, you know, one of these little Tykes trucks where, you know, the toddler actually sits in the little bike or little truck, whatever it was, and moves the wheel, but this is like this big pole in the back, if you're familiar with what I'm saying, which allows the mother to kind of direct and push the toddler. And I'm looking at this scene where the child is turning the wheel and turning the wheel, turning the wheel. And the mother actually is behind him, you know, kind of with the pole, helping to push him and direct him. So I smiled at my friend and I said to her, you know, this thing that I'm seeing with you and your child is really a good demonstration of two things in the world, us and Hashem. In our lives, we kind of turn the wheel and we think that we're creating our destiny and we're turning and turning and turning. And then there's Hashem standing behind us, kind of directing us. That's one way. And the other way, I said, is a man and a woman. That the man wants to be turning the wheel in the home. It's important for him to be in the driver's seat. And yet she, behind the scenes, can so subtly, yet so powerfully, help direct the direction of the home, of his development. But she does it behind the scenes. She allows him to turn the wheel, and she does it behind the scene. I'm not, for the purpose of the mashal, trying to make a man sound like a toddler, chas v'shalom. But the idea being that even if the powerful adult who's in the driver's seat, I still have so much ability to help subtly direct him in a way that feels good for him and feels good for me. And that's the osa ratzon bala. She creates his ratzon. He might not even have that ratzon yet. But through my subtle positive feedback, he develops a rutzon to want to be a provider in that area, and then he works with it. That's category number two. Let's go a little bit deeper, the third category. The third category, osa rutzon ba'ala. Let's redefine those words now for the third level. Osa rutzon ba'ala. She brings to fruition his hidden rutzon, his hidden desires. Osa, meaning motzi me'akoach lapoel, she brings it out. Osa ratzon ba'ala. He has a certain ratzon. It's something that he very much wants. He may be aware that he wants it. He may not even be aware of how much, how deeply he needs or wants this thing. It may be in his subconscious. But she, with her bina, with her insightfulness, can sense what his inner need is. And she knows how to bring it out into reality. Let me give you an example of this. I once was involved in a situation. I didn't know these people very well. But there was a certain man who very, very much wanted to go into education. He wanted to be a mechanech. And it's very hard in the chinuch world to find positions. He found a position, and for a short time he was a rebbe in yeshiva. Loved, loved, loved what he was doing. He was like flourishing. He just, you know, was giving over Torah to his Talmidim and loved the ability to give over in that way. Unfortunately, as is so common in today in the yeshiva world, and in many institutions, this yeshiva closed down and the man lost his job. I'm not sure actually because I don't know him well enough to know, but my sense is that many men would suffer greatly from such a scenario, but would maybe have a hard time articulating, you know, I miss the ability to give over Torah to Talmidim. I feel like a nothing sitting here without anybody to give over to. That was a high point in my self-esteem, and now I'm feeling kind of down in the dumps. I'm not sure if he was articulating all that. But because his wife was insightful, she knew that his ratzon really was to give over Torah, and it was taken away from him. He didn't have the ability anymore. But he was hurting from the fact that he could not fulfill that ratzon anymore. What happened was I started hearing every so often I would run into a former student who, you know, some of them already were married, and I'd run into former students from that particular yeshiva. And in talking, it would come out that they would say, yeah, you know, we just spent Pesach by Rabbi X's house, you know, their former rabbi, the one who lost the job when the yeshiva closed down. And then I'd run into another student and say, yeah, well, we just got a phone call from the rabbi's wife, and she found us a house that we could come be near them for Shabbos, and it's amazing. Most people love invitations. You give them an invitation to come for Pesach, come for Sukkot, come for Shabbos, come for Hanukkah, come for anything. People are happy to come. And this woman has a big family and a lot going on in her life, and yet she was able. I started kind of connecting. I started saying, wow, you know, it's interesting that these Talmidim are still being invited over. I mean, that yeshiva closed down a long time ago. And then all of a sudden I realized one day, and I kind of got the greatness of this lady. She knew that he had need to give over. So she created, quote unquote, like a yeshiva for him. Every Shabbos, he had his Talmidim around his table, and he would be able to be that Rebbe giving over Torah, learning with the guys in between the meals, sharing his ideas over Shabbos. She sensed that he was hurting, that he no longer, that he couldn't give over. And she created Osara Tzambara. She brought it out into fruition, into the actual world. She created a scenario where he was able to be a giver of Torah, even though he no longer had the official position. And that was the Osara Tzambara, that she knew that he was hurting, and she knew that there was something he needed. But he had no way to go about getting that thing that he wanted, or not in any creative way. And she was the creative one who brought it out into being. And I remember thinking how much respect I have for her, that she was able to tap into her husband's unspoken ratzon need, and she was osa, she brought it out into the world of action. Let's apply this in different directions. One of the nice, and this concept of Osara Tzambara is coming from Rav Schlanger in the Sefer called Ol Rachel. He talks about this. He says, one of the beautiful things about being Osara Tzambara in this area is that this is like a husband and wife who in the process are also becoming very close. Because if you could look into the soul of your spouse and say, what are his unspoken needs? What are his unspoken aspirations? And you can help bring those into the world. There's something very special about understanding something about the person that they may not even understand about themselves. For some people who are more articulate and more kind of out there with their emotions, your husband might even say, this and this and this hurts me. And then you run with it. You try to think about how to work, or this and this and this is my aspiration. And then she kind of tries to work that into the reality. But for many, many men, it's going to be unspoken desires and unspoken ritzonot that will that she has to sense and kind of smell them out and run with them. I'll give you an example. I think this is such an irony that is so true in so many homes. Men are often very, very busy, and they're often very busy out of the house with whatever it is that they're doing. And yet, we want our husbands to be the leaders of the home. We want our children to look up to our husbands and to turn to them. But yet often very practically, when a child has a question, he'll turn to his mommy because my mommy knows my friends. She knows my teachers. She knows what I'm doing. She knows that project. She's the one who's home with me. She knows what's going on. And therefore, children very often naturally will turn to their mother for guidance because the mother is much more, you know, in touch with them minute to minute and knows what's going on in their lives. And here, maybe, the husband might have a rut zone for the child to turn to him, to look to him for guidance. How does the woman osa rut zone bala in that way? When the husband is not home, and the child is sitting and asking the mother an opinion question on something, and she says, you know what? I can't wait for daddy to get home, because he's so good with these things. Let's ask him. Or you know what, tonight, later on, I'll ask Daddy what he thinks about this. Or even at the Shabbos table to say, let's ask Daddy, you know, let's tell Daddy about what happened this week in school and ask him what he thinks about it. She's Osa Ratzon Bala. It's so easy for us to just answer the child's question. We know better. We know what's going on. But Osa Ratzon Bala, she wants to run with his Ratzon to be more involved with the children, to know more what's going on. And she kind of plants those seeds. She makes it happen because she directs the children towards him. There's so many applications of this. A husband whose deeper need is to be respected. His deeper need is to be attractive in the wife, in the eyes of his wife. His deeper need is to be have a better relationship with his family or with your family. And these are sometimes unspoken needs to be more connected, to have more friends, to have a closer relationship with you. So many different types of things might be. And the Osa Ratzon Bala might be to invite a couple over where the husband has potential for friendship with your husband, or to think about how you are going to show him that he is more attractive in your eyes, or to do whatever it is to take that inner desire that might be there and to kind of run with it and try to fulfill that in the practical world. Like I said, I think the side product of it is that it's really a husband and wife who are connected on a deep level, that she kind of even understands his unspoken needs. And you know what? For those of us who are insightful, as I'm talking, you might already know what your husband's unspoken ratzon is. But for those people who don't and don't so easily have an insight into other people's ratzonos, you might just want to think, even just in a generic sense, what would every husband want in their home? And how can I bring that out to the paw? How could I help navigate it? And many wives have navigated so many things for their husbands, navigated positions in the community, navigated friendships, navigated closer relationships with children, closer relationships with parents, calling his grandmother every week to say good Shabbos to make sure that he gets to speak to her because he might not get to it. There's so many different things that we can do where we can help bring out into the world, you know, he really wants to be good to that relative, but he just forgets to call. So I can kind of like create a circumstance where he is doing what he wants to be doing because I made the phone call, got the kids on, he got on too. I mean, there's so many things that we can bring to the paw, that we can bring to fruition, because we know what the ratzon is, we know what the person wants, but they just don't quite know how to get there, and we help them get there. Okay, I think we covered, you know, these three little words, Osa Ratzon Bala, which is coming from the Medrash, and we kind of looked at it from three different levels, deeper and deeper, into really understanding what an Ishak Shera is, what a happily married woman is, and how we can enhance our relationships through these words, Osa Ratzon Bala. I wish everybody a lot of luck in this mission, and for those of you out there who are single who are listening to this, this is something you could even think about already when you're dating somebody. You could think about what are the hidden ratzonot that he might have. How would I be able to bring this out into fruition? What do I possibly need him to provide in the relationship? And how can I, through the positive pleasure cycle, get that started? And even just on the more practical way, what nice thing would he like that I could kind of go with him and do it his way? And this is true even in the dating relationship. It's possible already to apply these principles, and for sure when we're engaged and ultimately when we're married. So thank you very much, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.